Ekatra Podcast Conversations for the Curious, Essential Knowledge Simplified, your gateway to essential ideas that matter most. This audio summary has been prepared with the help of Ekatra AI.
Welcome to the Deep Dive. Today we're getting into something really fascinating, Annie Duke's book, Thinking in Bets, Making Smarter Decisions When You Don't Have All the Facts.
Yeah, this is such a crucial topic. I mean, think about it. We're constantly making decisions, big and small, usually without all the information we wish we had.
Exactly. Career changes, investments, even just, you know, planning your day, there's always uncertainty.
And we're generally, let's be honest, pretty bad at figuring out afterwards if we actually made a good choice or if we just got lucky or unlucky.
That's the thing, isn't it? We really want certainty. We want that A plus B equals C guarantee. Mm-hmm. But life just isn't like that.
Right. So our goal here today is to maybe shift your perspective on that uncertainty.
We want to give you some tools, some mental frameworks to stop chasing that impossible 100% certainty.
And instead, start thinking a bit more like, well, like a professional poker player, someone who deals with risk for a living.
Because the core idea here is that life and success in life, it's actually much less like a predictable game of chess.
And way more like poker, where you've got hidden cards, incomplete information, and yeah, luck plays a role.
Okay, so before we dive deeper into the ideas, let's talk about the author Annie Duke. Her background is pretty unique.
Oh, definitely. So first off, she was a top-tier professional poker player. We're talking World Series of Poker Bracelet winner, millions in earnings.
Which means thousands and thousands of hours making incredibly high-stakes decisions, fast, under immense pressure, real-world experience.
But here's the kicker. She's not just a poker pro. She also holds a PhD in cognitive psychology from the University of Pennsylvania.
Wow. Okay. So she studied decision science, cognitive biases, basically how our brains mess up when we're trying to make choices under uncertainty.
Exactly. So she brings together this deep academic understanding of why we make errors in judgment.
With the practical, hard-won experience of how to actually navigate those traps when real money or, you know, your tournament life is on the line.
It's that combination that's so powerful. It's not just theory, and it's not just gut instinct from playing cards. It's a synthesis.
Which explains why big companies bring her in, right?
Yeah.
To apply these principles to business strategy and decision making.
Precisely. She bridges that gap between the lab and the boardroom, or, well, the poker table.
All right, so that background really sets the stage for the core idea of thinking in bets. What's the central argument?
At its heart, the book argues we need to fundamentally change how we evaluate our decisions. We have to look at the quality of the process we use to make the choice.
Not just whether it turned out well or badly in the end.
Exactly. Because we fall victim to what she calls resulting.
Resulting. Okay, define that for us.
It's this super common cognitive bias where we judge a decision purely based on the outcome. Good result. Must have been a great decision. Bad result. Terrible decision.
Even if the process was totally flawed or incredibly sound, respectively?
Right. Think about it. If someone makes a reckless bet based on zero evidence, but happens to get lucky and win big,
we call them a genius.
We call them a genius. But the decision itself, the process, was actually terrible. Resulting ignores the huge role of luck.
So Duke gives us this simple but profound equation, right? Outcome, decision quality plus luck.
Yes. And since luck is, by definition, outside our control, focusing only on the outcome teaches us the wrong lessons, you can't improve your luck.
But you can improve your decision quality. Resulting stops us from doing that because it mixes up the signal, your skill, your process, with the noise, which is just chance.
Mm-hmm. And the whole betting mindset she talks about is the way out of that trap.
How so?
It forces you to think about the possibilities, the probabilities, the potential upsides and downsides before you know the outcome. It's about focusing on making the best possible bet given the information you have at the time.
Even if sometimes those good bets don't pay off because of bad luck. It's about the long game.
Exactly. It's about improving your average results over time by consistently making better quality decisions.
Which brings us beautifully to that central metaphor you mentioned earlier. Life is poker, not chess.
Right. We often wish life was like chess.
Yeah. Clear rules, all the pieces visible, the better player usually wins. Pure skill, complete information.
But life just isn't like that, is it? It's much more like poker. You don't see the other player's cards. There's hidden information, bluffing.
And luck. A huge element of luck, like catching the right card on the river.
Exactly. And the danger of thinking life is chess is that when something goes wrong, you either blame yourself entirely, thinking you should have foreseen everything.
Or you blame the process unjustly, even if it was sound.
In poker, good players understand you can play a hand perfectly, make all the right calculations based on the odds, and still lose because someone else got lucky.
That doesn't mean you made a bad decision, though.
Not at all. It just means luck wasn't on your side that time.
She uses that famous or infamous Super Bowl example, right? Pete Carroll's decision to pass on the goal line.
Oh, yeah, the interception. Instantly, everyone screamed, worst call ever. Total resulting.
Because the outcome was catastrophic. Game over.
But Duke points out, if you actually look at the situation, that the clock, the timeouts, the likely defensive formation, the probabilities of a run succeeding versus a pass.
The decision to pass might have actually been, probabilistically speaking, a pretty reasonable, maybe even good call.
Possibly. The point is, judging it solely on the terrible outcome meant missing the chance to analyze the process behind the decision. Was the reasoning sound, given what they knew then?
That ability to analyze the process, to think in probabilities, that's key. It connects to her idea of wanna bet.
Ah, yes, the wanna bet challenge. This is such a practical tool. It's about moving away from absolute statements. You know, this will definitely work or there's no way that will happen.
We tend to state our beliefs like facts.
We do. But Duke says we should treat our beliefs as bets on the truth. And the simple act of asking yourself or someone else, wanna bet, forces you to put a number on it.
So instead of, I'm sure this project will succeed, it becomes.
Okay, I'm, say, 70% confident this project will succeed based on X, Y, and Z.
And suddenly, it's not a fixed certainty. It's a hypothesis. It's something you can test and update.
Exactly. It introduces intellectual humility. It forces you to think about why you believe something and how strong that belief really is. It makes you look for evidence, not just confirmation.
Which fights against that other big bias she discusses. Motivated reasoning.
Oh, that's a powerful one. Our tendency to process information in a way that confirms what we already believe or what makes us feel good or look smart.
Our ego gets in the way. We want to be right.
We really do. But Duke argues the goal shouldn't be to be right. It should be to be accurate, to get closer to the truth, even if that means admitting our previous belief was wrong.
That takes real intellectual humility. Being able to say, huh, based on this new data, my 70% confidence is now more like 55%.
That's the mark of a good decision maker, she argues. Constant belief updating.
But doing that alone is really hard. Our biases are strong, which is why she talks about the buddy system.
Yes, the need for a decision group or accountability partners. Because we're often blind to our own biases.
And the key is, this group isn't there just to agree with you.
Absolutely not. It's about setting up productive dissent. You need people with diverse perspectives who are encouraged to challenge your assumptions, to poke holes in your reasoning.
The goal is accuracy for the group, not just making everyone feel comfortable or reaching a quick consensus.
She mentions things like red teams, like intelligence agencies use, a team specifically tasked with finding flaws in the main plan.
Their job is literally to argue against it, to find the weaknesses.
Right. And another technique she champions is steel manning.
Okay, I know straw manning, attacking a weak version of someone's argument. Steel manning is the opposite.
Exactly. Before you critique someone else's idea or viewpoint, you have to articulate the strongest possible version of their argument, maybe even stronger than they presented it themselves.
That forces you to genuinely understand the opposing view and engage with its best points, not just knock down an easy target, promotes respect and better evaluation.
Definitely. Now, another big challenge is our relationship with time. We're not great at thinking long term.
Ah, temporal discounting.
Yeah.
We want the reward now, and we tend to downplay future consequences. The marshmallow test writ large.
Pretty much. So she offers tools for mental time travel to counteract this. The first one is the pre-mortem.
The pre-mortem. I love this one. So before you start something big.
A project, a new strategy, whatever. You gather your team and imagine it's, say, a year later, and the whole thing has failed spectacularly. Utter disaster.
Okay, grim, but potentially useful.
And then everyone spends time writing down all the reasons why it failed. What went wrong?
So you're proactively identifying all the potential risks and weaknesses before you even start.
Exactly. It leverages our natural anxiety about failure and turns it into a constructive planning tool. You uncover potential problems when they're still cheap to fix.
Makes a lot of sense. What's the other time travel tool?
The 10-10-10 analysis. This is great for personal decisions, especially.
10-10. What does that stand for?
When you're facing a choice, you ask yourself, what are the likely consequences of this decision in 10 minutes, then in 10 months, and finally in 10 years.
Ah, okay. So it forces you to look beyond the immediate gratification or pain.
Precisely. That impulse buy might feel great in 10 minutes, but how does it look in 10 months when the credit card bill arrives? And how does it align with your financial goals in 10 years?
It helps align your short-term actions with your long-term values and goals. Very clever.
Yeah, really practical stuff.
Now, let's try to synthesize this. If you take away just a few core messages from thinking in bets, what should they be?
Okay, first and foremost, separate the process from the outcome. Constantly ask yourself, was this a good decision based on what I knew then, regardless of how it turned out? Stop resulting.
Got it. Process over outcome for evaluation. What's second?
Embrace probabilistic thinking. Get comfortable with uncertainty. Start using percentages, even if they're rough guesses. I am 60% sure there's maybe a 20% chance of that. It makes your thinking more flexible and realistic.
Less black and white, more shades of gray. Third.
Cultivate intellectual humility. Actively seek out evidence that might contradict your beliefs. Be willing to update your views. The goal is accuracy, not ego protection. Being wrong today is okay if it makes you more accurate tomorrow.
Love that. And the last one.
Recognize that outcomes are noisy feedback. Because luck plays a role, you can't just learn from results alone. You need a system, maybe like that decision journal idea, to help you figure out what was skill and what was just noise, just luck.
So you learn the right lessons over time.
Makes sense.
And the book is full of these really memorable phrases that kind of stick with you.
Yeah, those little mantras. Let's revisit a couple. The big one, of course. Life is poker, not chess.
Sets the whole stage, doesn't it? Acknowledging uncertainty is step one.
And there's that equation, framed as a life philosophy. The quality of our lives is the sum of decision quality plus luck.
Really focuses your attention on the part you can actually control. The quality of your decisions.
And the definition of that trap we keep falling into. Resulting is thinking that bad outcomes were the result of bad decisions.
Just having the word for it helps you spot it in yourself and others. It's a mental shortcut we have to fight.
And finally, that reframing of belief. Our beliefs are bets on the truth, and how accurate our beliefs are indicates how well we've been betting.
It turns your convictions into hypotheses you can actually test and improve. It's quite profound, really.
Okay, so this isn't just abstract philosophy. How can people actually apply these ideas, like today or this week?
Well, for big decisions like career moves or investments, seriously consider starting that decision journal.
Write down your reasoning, the key factors, your confidence level, before you know the outcome.
Exactly. Then review it later. It's incredibly powerful for cutting through hindsight bias and seeing if your process was sound, not just whether you got lucky or unlucky.
What about for, say, teamwork or projects?
Definitely use the pre-mortem. Before kicking off anything new, schedule that meeting. Okay, yeah. Let's assume this fails. Why did it fail? It's amazing what you'll uncover.
It surfaces risks and assumptions early. Good one. Any tips for personal life?
Using probabilistic language in disagreements can be surprisingly effective. Instead of you always do X, I feel like maybe 70% of the time, this happens.
Oh, okay. Might lower the temperature a bit.
It can. It shifts from accusation to observation, an open space for discussion about perceptions, about the actual frequency. It encourages truth-seeking, not just winning the argument.
And for sticking to goals.
Think about Ulysses contracts, pre-commitments. Setting up automatic savings, removing junk food from the house before you start a diet, telling friends about your goal to create accountability.
Binding your future emotional self with the plans of your current rational self.
You got it. It acknowledges that willpower is fleeting and uses structure to help you stay on track.
As we wrap up, what was the most surprising or impactful thing for you from revisiting this?
For me, it's probably the practical power of just asking wanna bet. Not necessarily literally betting, but forcing that quantification. It's a simple, almost jarring way to check your own certainty and push for more evidence. It really highlights how often we're just guessing.
Yeah, that's a good one. For me, I think it's the emphasis on intellectual humility and the group aspect. The idea that overcoming bias isn't really a solo mission, that we genuinely need structured dissent and diverse viewpoints to make better collective choices. It's kind of freeing to realize you don't have to have all the answers yourself.
Absolutely. It makes better decision-making a team sport, in a way.
So, maybe a final thought for everyone listening. Remember, success isn't about perfectly predicting the future. It's about making consistently good bets based on the best available information, understanding the probabilities, and learning from both wins and losses.
And maybe take a moment today. Think about a recent decision where the outcome wasn't what you hoped for. Ask yourself honestly, am I resulting Was it truly a bad decision process, or was it perhaps a reasonable bet that just didn't pay off this time due to luck? Separating those two is key.
A powerful exercise. See you next time with another remarkable thinker, another powerful book, and another idea that has shaped our world. This audio summary is brought to you by Acatra Foundation.